we're so used to seeing things that, in my opinion, aren't quite right in our treatment of animals.
Yeah, the less we eat, the less violence is being done, and the less destruction to the environment.
Everyone eats, and everyone has to make a moral decision every time that we sit down to the table.
Welcome to the Animal Voices Radio Show, Western Canada's only radio program on animal advocacy and compassionate living. This is 100.5 FM CFRO Co-op Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Today is Friday, February the 19th, 2016. I am your host, Allison Cole, and I'm joined here today by our guest co-host, Caroline Carnery.
Hi, Allison.
And Almira Tanner.
Hello.
Welcome, everyone. And I just wanted to give a special shout out to my dad, who turned 84 this week.
Yay.
So today, our feature interview is going to be with Caroline on a topic that is close to her heart. If our listeners remember thinking all the way back to our January the 15th show, we presented a segment with Caroline entitled An Activist Quest to Veganize the World. And in that segment slash interview, Caroline told us her transformational story that started with touring a slaughterhouse as a child to then giving up meat and becoming the activist for animals that she is today. That was part one of this series, which you can listen to at animalvoices.org. And today we will present to you part two, where Caroline will continue the story and tell us about her quest and her strategies to educate and convey a transformation towards compassion for all creatures with everyone in her life. So that segment is coming up in about 21 minutes, so please do stay tuned. Now, have you all heard about the new vegan butcher shop that opened up in Minneapolis, Minnesota recently? Did you hear about that?
We sure have.
Yeah. Well, I have too. My sister, Leanna, our roving correspondent, went there to check it out, and we have a review from her about the store right here. Hi, Leanna. So please tell us, what is the Herbivorous Butcher and why and how was it started?
Yeah, so it's located in Minneapolis, and it's actually the first vegan butcher shop in the United States, which is pretty cool. And it's opened by Kale and Aubrey Walsh, who are siblings, and their products are all plant-based meats and cheeses. And they started selling their products at the Minneapolis Farmers Market, and then they always seemed to sell out, so they just decided to open a retail storefront so they could always have their products in production and never run out. So they had their grand opening last month on January 23rd.
And you were actually able to go there very shortly after they opened. So can you describe what your experience was like of going there, and what did you see? And from what I heard in the news is that it was like super busy with lineups.
Yeah, so I went a week after they opened, and the location is easy to find. I thought they had a great storefront, brick building, wood around the entrance, big window to see inside, and glass doors. And they have a plaque on the front of the store that says, "Dedicated to our great planet, all the creatures that inhabit it, and all those that protect them." So that was cool. It has a bit of a cleaver theme. There's like sign outside is a huge cleaver, and the door handle in the front door is a cleaver. Then inside there's a portion of a wall that is wood with like cleavers in it. But when I went inside, it was busy. And then for the duration of the time I was there, actually, there was a steady flow of people, which is great. Because, like you said, like on opening day, the lineup was outside and around the block. So they're having a great response.
Well, that's so cool. So it seems like they have a bunch of different products, meats and cheeses. Can you describe what kinds of products that you saw there?
Yeah, when I was there, the daily specials were bacon bits, roast beef, ground beef, and American cheese. And then in the cases for meats, there was deli ham, bologna, pepperoni, maple sage breakfast sausage, spicy Italian sausage, Mexican chorizo, sriracha brat, smoky house barbecue ribs, Korean ribs, and porterhouse steak. And then in the cheese case, there was dill Havarti, camembert mozzarella. And the way they have the meats like laid out on the trays, it's just like a deli counter, I think. Like the deli slices are sliced in the same way. And I thought the Korean ribs, like with the sauce on it, had a very close resemblance.
What are the meats and cheeses made out of, do you know?
The base for most of their meats is vital wheat gluten, and then others have tofu and pinto beans, and then spices, all different kinds of spices to make the different flavors. And then the cheese is from soy milk.
It sounds like a real wide range of products that they have. So you bought something there. What did you buy and how did it taste?
Mm-hmm. I did. I didn't end up venturing too far, though. I purchased the bologna and the spices were just right for me. It was mild and tasty. I really liked it. But next time I go, I think I'm going to try the sausages because they looked really good and they're good portion sizes, too. But they also ship to anywhere in the state. So I may do that and order ribs and I know have friends over for dinner or something.
And not tell them that they're not eating real ribs, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I was in line up there and I talked to a lady and I asked her if she tried their products before and she hadn't, but she said she was there because she has like a monthly gathering and she usually gets the field roast products for the vegetarians who attend. But this time she was going to try these products and she even ended up buying the Korean ribs and she said she's going to give it to her son and not tell him that it's plant-based because you can't really tell.
So it seems like they're really authentic looking. And actually, from the pictures I was seeing online, wow, like those cheeses look like really yummy. They look like the cheeses I remember eating. And so do the meats, actually. So what do you think of businesses like this that are transforming the paradigm of meat-centered food shops? It seems like they're reclaiming the word butcher. And they're saying we can be a butcher shop, but with just plants and cruelty-free.
I think these kind of shops is just a way to like get closer to the tipping point, like to show people that you don't have to harm animals to satisfy your taste buds. And I read in an article that Cale Walsh said that they want meat eaters to feel comfortable making the switch. So these kinds of businesses are just great to help people with transitioning. And it's a way to provoke like a shift in thinking too, I think. Like the lady I spoke with in line, she was neither a vegetarian nor vegan, but she was shopping for people who have a plant-based diet. But when she got there and saw the food, she was interested. Like she was wanting to know what the ingredients are and wanting to try them. So the more businesses there are, like the vegan butcher shop, the more exposure there is to the public. And they start a conversation too. Like I've read in social media how some people are against the term vegan butcher because of the definition of butcher. And I read that Cale's take on that is, he said, we'll stop calling ourselves vegan butchers when they stop calling it humane slaughter. So it gets people like talking and thinking about the different issues when it comes to animal agriculture that they may not have otherwise thought about. But ultimately, these businesses help both the animals and the environment. So I think they're a step in the right direction.
Well, thanks, Leanna, for your review of the Herbivorous Butcher. I look forward to hearing about your future experiences there.
You're welcome.
So that was the review on the Herbivorous Butcher in Minneapolis, Minnesota. What do you think? I want one here. Caroline, you're going to bring one here, right? Isn't that your business plan?
I do. You know, the other day on Dragon's Den, the Yam Chops from Toronto was picked up on that show by the guy who owned Boston Pizza franchises. And I would love to bring them to Vancouver.
They're a vegan butcher, right?
That's right. It's all plant-based. That's correct.
Yeah, and you sent me, they were on the Dragon's Den, so people can check that out because you sent me a video from it somehow, which I haven't looked at yet, but that's online and available, right?
Yeah, it shows the process of them explaining their product and what it is, and and then they got their funding, so...
I think it's amazing, and I want one here in Vancouver, so get onto it, please.
Well, they haven't franchised it yet,
yeah.
But I mean, that's certainly the goal down the road.
So we have a special guest in the studio here today, Almira Tanner. We've had you on the show before a few times, probably just to do interviews about the various activities and actions that you have been involved with and organized, Almira, over the past several years. And Caroline, you haven't met Almira before, but when I was talking about her on the way here in the car, I was saying, just to sum it up, is Almira organizes most of the protests here in Vancouver. So that's what you need to know. But you're actually moving in a couple of days. But Almira, hello. Welcome
hello.
To the show. But we have actually, we've never talked to you just sort of as an individual to sort of see what your story is. How did you become this uber activist? You weren't just born this way. way none of us were. And we all have a story that led us here. So I wanted to take this time, if you could spend just like a few minutes just talking about like what brought you to this place, starting from as a child or whenever something happened to like make this all happen for you.
It's exciting to be actually in the studio for the first time. I do want to say there are a lot of people in Vancouver who are organizing a lot of protests. And as Allison mentioned, I'm going to be leaving soon, but there's going to be lots of protests still going on, and I'm going to miss all of the activity that happens in Vancouver. And to answer your question, how did I come here? I was always an animal lover as a child and became vegetarian quite young anyway, when I was in grade 4, based on the influence of one of my friends. But it took me 13 years from then to realize that veganism was, you know, the only way to live if you wanted to cause the least harm possible to all of the animals who live here on the planet with us. So when I became vegan, I didn't really get into activism right away. I was doing a little bit of stuff here and there, but I think my tipping point was really when I went to California for the first time in May of 2014 and participated in the Forum, which is a type of conference with Direct Action Everywhere, and just saw all of the incredible activists that were there and became really, really inspired and really empowered to bring that energy back to Vancouver. And that is really when I feel like I started on my activism journey. And now here I am, you know, less than 2 years later, I've taken a leave of absence from my job and I'm going to go focus on activism a little bit.
When you say your job, you mean the one that you actually get paid for, right? Because I kind of think of this as your job. Like, I don't know, how do you work? As you're saying, like, you work full time at a job that has nothing to do with animal activism.
Yeah.
But I feel like you do animal activism full time as well. Would you say that's the case?
I do think about animal rights and animals most of the time that I'm awake, and probably sometimes when I'm sleeping as well.
That counts as activism. You live, sleep, and breed activism.
And it's just become a bit much right now, trying to balance all of the demands of a full-time job and all of the demands of this other job that I'm doing that isn't paid. So, like I said, I'm taking a bit of a break from my paid job, and I realize how lucky I am to be able to do that. And we'll spend the next 6 months focusing exclusively on activism and animal liberation.
Unlike usual, but not really.
Okay, still 40 hours extra a week.
Right. It's so true. I don't even know how you do it. Like, I really find that I need to scale back my animal activism. And what I do is I do the radio show. It takes up all my free time.
I can imagine.
I don't know. And I'm not working full-time hours at my paid job because I can't, and do this too and not burn out. So I applaud you for, you know, taking the time off to focus on what your passions are exclusively. Now, you are the leader of Direct Action Everywhere here in Vancouver, and you had a protest a couple weeks ago, I think it was, at the new Whole Foods. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so myself and there are other co-organizers here, Sophia and Paula, and there was a new Whole Foods that opened around Brentwood Mall, and Whole Foods has a lot of vegan options, lots of vegans like them, and this is certainly not a boycott campaign of Whole Foods, but we target Whole Foods because they really, really promote this humane myth, the idea that they can exploit and kill animals in this loving and caring way. And they are probably one of the biggest promoters of this humane myth. So at Direct Action Everywhere, we have spent a lot of time going after Whole Foods and going after this, their marketing strategy, essentially. And so there was this new Whole Foods that opened up around Brentwood, and I thought, you know, we have to go disrupt this. And it was hard to do a disruption on the original day of their grand opening because it was Thursday, and it's difficult to organize protests during the week. But lucky for me, I work quite close by, so I, you know, it was lunch break. I hopped on the bus, like, really, really quickly, met a few other people there at the Whole Foods, did a short protest on my lunch break, and made it back to work on time. And then we did a larger one the weekend after. It was really interesting because I'm quite confident they were expecting us there. They had way too many security guards than a grocery store would need. And
I never even noticed any security guards there.
Yeah, they had plainclothes security and hired security. I mean, they weren't violent or anything, but they were ready for us. And that's one of the downfalls, I guess, of making public events. But, you know, we're not scared. We want to do things out in the open, and we want to make our events accessible to everybody. So we put them out there and we see what happens. And it was a really successful protest.
Yeah, well, I'm definitely on your email list of all the events that are going on, and you have such a variety. And I wanted to talk a little bit about the one that you've got going on this weekend where you're going to be giving a talk about open rescue. I attended a talk by Wayne Schwing from DXC last year about this. I found it to be really fascinating. We actually had him on the show to talk about open rescue. You're going to be doing a talk on this subject this week. I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about that. And give us details, too, about the talk if people want to go.
Yeah, so open rescue, for those who don't know, is a tactic in the animal rights movement where basically people go onto farms or, you know, factory farms, family farms, whatever you want to call them, document the conditions and rescue as many animals as possible that we can provide appropriate care for. And in this process, doing this openly, in the sense that we aren't hiding our faces with masks, we're not ashamed or afraid of showing who we are when we do this, because we are proud of what we're doing, but we also feel like we're doing the right thing. And that's why we're doing this openly, in the sense this is a strategy that was mostly developed by an activist in Australia named Patty Mark. And so myself and some other activists in Vancouver and from the California area, we'll be doing a talk about open rescue, specifically about the latest investigation that we released a few months ago about a 5-plus rated Whole Foods turkey supplier in California. So this talk is going to be happening on Sunday, February 21st at 2 p.m. at 186 East 20th Avenue. So don't be surprised when you come to that location, and it is a house. It's not a community center or anything. So you're at the right spot if you end up at a house.
I was there last week. I bet you didn't know that.
No, I didn't know that.
I had to pick up Carissa.
My house is this like activist hub right now. It seems like there's always either someone living there or a meeting happening or something like that. I really love it.
So, yeah, that's awesome. Thank you for sharing with us. And I wanted to say that Almira came on the show today because she heard my call out for volunteers and people to help on the show. And normally you work on Fridays. And because you're moving in 4 days, I guess you have today, you're done with your job.
My job is
and
over.
How did you want to spend your last free Friday in Vancouver? You wanted to be on the Animal Voices show.
I love talking.
So I thank you for volunteering yourself to be on the show. We certainly appreciate having you here. And yeah, any quick website links or anything for people to go to find out more?
Yeah, I think the best way to find out about us in Vancouver specifically is to sign up to our mailing list, which you can do at directactioneverywhere.com/signup. Otherwise, we have a Facebook page. You can look us up, Direct Action Everywhere, Vancouver Coast Salish Territories. And I'm really excited to see all of the great activism that's going to keep going on when I'm gone. And I'm going to be really jealous because I know some of the things we have planned and I want to be there for them. So sign up to the mailing list and take part in our actions, potlucks, all that kind of good stuff. And I will see everybody when I come back in August.
Yeah. And this is actually your last chance to see everyone too. So if anyone wants to say hello or goodbye to Almira, that this weekend is the time. So thanks, Almira, for coming to chat about this. And we'll definitely be chatting more throughout the show about stuff.
Thank you.
You are listening to Animal Voices on Vancouver's Co-op Radio, 100.5 FM CFRO. 100% listener-sponsored radio broadcasting live from the east side on unceded Coast Salish territories.
Every weekday from 7 to 8 a.m., Media Mornings brings you independent news and culture you won't hear anywhere else.
Daily headlines, interviews, countless local voices, and our Latin America report help you make sense of today's news, from Coast Salish territories to global affairs.
Guests include David Suzuki.
Media become hostages of the corporate agenda, and thank God for the independents like you.
Indigenous activists like Pam Palmater.
This kind of radio show helps inform Indigenous and non-Indigenous people and hopefully inspire our Indigenous citizens citizens to take action.
Social justice advocates like Maud Barlow.
We are continue to be America's gas tank, although now we want to be the gas tank for the world.
Artists like Kenny Starr.
Change is created by lots of different types of activists.
Ray Spoon.
Gender is limiting and affecting everyone.
And authors like Michael Parenti.
The state is at the service of these corporations.
So tune in to Media Mornings, weekdays 7 to 8 a.m.
on Vancouver Co-op Radio 100.5 FM and podcasting at w2media.ca.
And now we have our new segment. Caroline, what do you have for us?
Serial New Yorker restaurateur Ravi DeRossi revealed last week his plan to eliminate animal products from his 15 bars and restaurants. And in May, he plans to shut down his most popular restaurant, the Bourgeois Pig, and reopen a month later as a vegan tapas eatery, Lady Bird. And he is reported to have said, "I am more worried about my conscience and living without the weight on my shoulder of the damage I'm doing and the suffering of animals."
Because he's vegan, right?
He is vegan.
I looked more into that. I'm like, yeah. What kind of a restaurateur, crazy person changes all of his restaurants to be vegan? A vegan, obviously. So, but, you know, you don't really think. I don't really think that there could be a restaurateur out there with 15 restaurants who's vegan, who hasn't made all his restaurants vegan yet. We're not seeing a lot of that, but it's starting to come and it's starting to happen. One example I can think of is the Wynn restaurant in Las Vegas, mm-hmm, right? Yeah. That's a pretty large, they have a lot of different restaurants in that hotel, the Wynn, and the owner of that became vegan several years ago. And not only was he giving, I think it was, he was giving copies of Forks Over Knives to all of his friends to watch. So he's an activist too, but he's also was implementing vegan menus on all of his menus. But this restaurateur has gone even one step further, and he's making all of his restaurants vegan.
Yeah, and he's shutting down his most successful restaurant to completely reinvent it as a vegan restaurant. And again, this morning in LA, there was a star. I can't remember his name. I was just reading before I ran out the door to come here today. He's opened a vegan taqueria LA.
Yeah, it's really awesome to see these people who maybe at the beginning they thought veganism is my personal choice and it doesn't extend to my businesses. And now he's realizing that, no, veganism isn't a personal choice. Like, it's wrong to eat animals. And now he's making all of his restaurants align with his values.
He's realizing that he can't live with his conscience. And that's, I love that when people, you know, sometimes it's hard for people because they're like, oops, I own these bloody meat shops. What do I do now?
People often talk about the vegan journey. And for me, what I notice in people is that the vegan journey happens largely after people become vegan. And that it's when they really start to realize the speciesism and the exploitation that we just accept every day of our lives. And that's when the eye opening, once the eyes have become open and the heart has become open, that's when you really start to see stuff in a new light for the very first time. And then you can't tolerate what you've been a part of, and you have to make changes.
And that's how the world will change.
Yeah.
So I have another interesting news story here. This broke a couple days ago. You might have heard of it. The Vancouver Aquarium is suing the maker of the documentary Vancouver Aquarium Uncovered, that's Gary Charbonneau, we've had him on the show before, for alleged copyright violation in this film. So we've talked about Gary and his film on the show quite a bit before, and last month I had announced that this feature film documentary, which is basically, it's a grand expose of the Vancouver Aquarium and all the undergoings there behind the scenes that we don't see, similar to the film Blackfish, which exposed SeaWorld. But this is just for the Vancouver Aquarium. This came out last summer, and it was released for free on YouTube and Vimeo last month. So what they have done now is the Vancouver Aquarium, they're suing them for copyright violations, saying that he didn't have permission to use some of the images and video that he took off their website to use in his documentary. And because of that, just because of this injunction, it's already grounds for Vimeo to remove the video from their site. And it looks like they have have done that already, although I don't think it's removed from YouTube yet. So Gary says that he doesn't think he's done anything wrong. He has no plans to pull the movie down. He says, I think the truth needs to be told. We're just going to go where this thing takes us. And actually, we're going to have Gary on the show next week to tell his side of the story. So if people want to tune into the show next week to have to listen to an interview with him. So what do you think?
I think there's nothing better than a good lawsuit to
Caroline. This is from Caroline, the lawyer, by the way,
to raise awareness of your documentary. And gosh knows that documentary filmmakers are hard pressed to make any money. So this is marketing you can't otherwise buy.
Yeah, well, that's what Gary's saying, too, is when someone sues someone for something they don't have, it's not going to be much of a lawsuit rather than publicity. And actually, one of a local activist had noted on her Facebook yesterday that within the 24 hours since the story had gone to the press on CBC and the Globe and Mail picked it up, the film had actually been viewed over 2,400 times on YouTube. So there you go. What do you think of that?
Well, increasing the view count.
And he didn't plan it.
Right? Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
And I think it's really interesting to see what the Vancouver Aquarium is suing him for. You know, they're suing him for copyright. And I'm not a copyright lawyer, so that's here nor there. But they're not suing him for defamation. They're not suing him for saying false things about them because they can't back that up. They know that the information in his video was true and they're just scrambling and trying to find something to get this off the air because it, rightfully so, makes them look really bad. And I hope that this is going to be another nail in the coffin for the Vancouver Aquarium, which, you know, is like the Whole Foods of the aquarium world. They're such humane washers. They say they're doing all these great things, but it's a really terrible place for these animals.
Yeah, for sure. So we'll be definitely hearing more about that next week. Definitely tune into next week's show. You are listening to Animal Voices here on 100.5 FM, CFRO Vancouver, Co-op Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Now, Caroline, it's time for your part of the show. We had you on the show on January 15th to start off the discussion of your quest to veganize the world. And you, in that part of the discussion, we called it part one, you told your story about what impacted you to shift to a vegan lifestyle and thus transform into an activist for the animals. And as I had mentioned before, it's an amazing story. I encourage our listeners to check it out. Check out the podcast at animalvoices.org. So this is part two of the story where we come to the main theme of your goal to veganize the world one person at a time. And I don't say that lightly or facetiously. It's the truth. So what do we mean by this? What is your goal exactly and why?
Well, my goal is to, you know, perhaps what I should do is just go back for a moment and tell people that when I was 12, for those people who haven't listened to the other episode, is that when I was 12 years old, almost 13 years old, I spent a day in a slaughterhouse on a tour where I saw thousands and thousands of animals meet their death face on. And I was traumatized by that in the extreme, and it changed my entire life. And so my goal is to raise awareness about animal use and abuse, to raise awareness around speciesism, the assumption of human superiority, which leads us to exploit other animals. And the fact that animals have the inherent right to their own lives for their own purposes. And of course, the ultimate goal in all of that is to increase the number of vegans in the world so as to reduce the use and abuse of animals.
You know, I see you, I haven't known you for that long, but I see you as being a loud and proud vegan, but you also claim to be an introvert. So how is that? How do those two reconcile with each other? How can you be, I think you're extroverted towards your activism, but you're an introvert as well. How do those two things work together in your activism?
Well, let me explain that. I'm not a shy person, but in the, this is a Jungian concept that I'm adopting of introversion and extroversion. And so introverts aren't necessarily shy. They just don't get their energy from highly stimulating environments and from a lot of social activity. So I recharge as an introvert by going home and crawling into my hamster ball in my house. And I roll around that in my house all day long.
You have a hamster ball in
your house? I have a human-sized hamster ball. It's
true. I thought you were joking.
No.
I don't know if I heard that.
No. I am joking.
Okay. Oh, okay.
No, I call it my hamster ball because that's the metaphor for everybody has to get away from me and I need to retreat right now. So I say I need to be in my hamster ball. So this is a force field. And so sometimes I have three rescue dogs and sometimes they can come in my hamster ball with me if they don't talk to me. And my computer is in there and my cell phone is in my hamster ball. And that is my command center, otherwise known as my bedroom. And I direct traffic from there in my introverted way, which is to reach out and find people who are extroverted, who do have a lot of influence in the world, who are either popular or highly respected, who are empathetic and intelligent. And I go after those people and I find a way, find an entry point to help influence them to become vegan.
So how do you do this?
Oh,
maybe you can give some examples.
I think there are so many different ways I do this. I on Facebook, I share a lot of information. I share educational information. I share recipes. I show videos. I've been known to bring people over to my house and lock them in my bedroom and get them to watch videos while we prepare food in the kitchen for them to eat.
And so you feed your prisoners.
I feed my prisoners. And I have many, many different ways to influence people. But that's one of my favorite stories. And this is somebody, a great influencer with a huge following of people behind her. And her and her daughter came to my house. And I locked them in the bedroom. And I said, I need you to do this for me as a personal favor. I've been trying to get you to go vegan for 4 years. Nothing is working. Just give me a couple of hours of your time. Go in the bedroom and watch Cowspiracy. So I didn't pull out the big guns. It wasn't Earthlings. Mm-hmm. It was Cowspiracy. And those two people walked into my bedroom in my apartment. See, that's my into my hamster ball, actually. And they walked in omnivores and they came out vegans. And now these two people are huge. This is a mother-daughter team. They are huge vegan activists.
That's an amazing story. I'm wondering, how do you decide what approach to take? You said you didn't bring out Earthlings because that's sort of like, I would say like that's the last resort maybe. Like that's the, you know, that I guess that would be the thing like sort of to cover everyone. Right. But Cowspiracy, I think, would reach. And that's a film that talks about the environmental devastations towards animal agriculture and how the environmental organizations are trying to hide this from people. Mm-hmm. So what was it that made you decide to show that film to them? Like, how do you decide what approach you're going to take?
Well, in that case, I went in that direction because nothing else was working. I had tried the ethical approach with this person.
Okay, so that's why you didn't show Earthlings. You didn't think it would have that much of an impact.
So I went in a completely different direction and watched Cowspiracy. And then I got them to watch Forks Over Knives. And since they've become ethical vegans, as they started in an environmental place and they've become ethical vegans and they are extreme vegan activists now from an ethical perspective. So the obvious entry point wasn't the obvious entry point. And so it was less obvious as I went in a different direction with them.
I guess because you've been doing this, like how many years would you say you've been trying to veganize the world one person at a time?
Pretty much my whole life. In one form or another.
So I would call you then, I would say you're an expert on, I guess, figuring out people and how they work. And I guess the question I have is from your experiences from your whole life mm-hmm. as being an animal activist and a vegan from a child, what have you learned about people in terms of what reaches them?
Oh, gosh. Different strokes for different folks.
Yeah, yeah.
And and denial is stronger than heroin. And sometimes I think cheese is as well. And so that if you can actually open the door a little bit in a different place, sometimes then you can introduce the, you know, the ethical information. I've been criticized in the past, and I recognize that one of my problems is as a ethical vegan that I've been a bit of a one-trick pony, just hammering on the treatment of animals. And so I've really broadened my approach in the last couple of years to include health issues and starting with the animal that we all are and taking a look at our own hearts and our own and diseases that are caused by meat and by so-called dairy. And so I've branched out into talking about health issues, environmental issues, global issues, issues of social responsibility, and of course the animal justice and animal rights issue is always central. But I try to diversify now.
Right. Do you feel that you need to, I've talked before on the show about reaching out to the low-hanging fruit, that is the people who are ready to hear the message, although you've been saying too that like there's people that you've been working on for years and years until they finally, I guess you're peeling back the layers of them, like their onion skins or whatever you want to call it.
I'll tell you why I have that approach, Allison, and it's because I, you know, on one hand, it's true to say I am going to veganize the world in my mind one person at a time. But I know if I get highly influential people on the hook and they become vegan and they become vegan activists, then this is a mathematical algorithm. This is honestly exponential. Yeah. If I get, you know, if we say, you know, on average that one person eats 70 to 90 animals a year, but I get one person to go vegan and that person gets 30 people to go vegan, and then those people get, you know, it's like the old shampoo commercial, you tell two friends and you tell two friends. So my goal is to go after the influencers in the world, to influence the influencers.
You have a friend named Stephanie. Do you want to tell us about her?
Stephanie Dubinsky lives in Nanaimo, and she's shares her time in between Puerto Vallarta, Mexico, where she does intensive dog rescue. She is one of the most empathetic, loving, dedicated to animal people I know. And I've been going after her since 2012 to become a vegan.
So what do you think might happen if we called her up right now to put her on the spot? Do you want to do that?
I have had, to be fair, a little exchange with Stephanie. And a couple of nights ago, I said, I really want you to become a vegan. What would you say if I called you on air and asked you this? And she left an opening there for me to
do
that.
We're going to call her, okay? I've never made like a call on air before while like we're on the air. So, because I'm doing everything here. I'm like operating and running the show. So we're going to hear some buttons being pressed here.
While we're waiting for her, I just wanted to say I really think that strategy of finding influential people is really great because they have the power to change a lot of institutions, whether those are politicians or just people with a lot of social influence. I think that's what we need to go for, like getting the issue on the table, getting these people who have a platform to talk about these issues. It's a really wise strategy.
Yeah, thank you. I think if the great Maya Angelou were alive today, I would make it my life's mission to influence her to become a vegan.
She would be your number one?
She would be my, no, I would, 8 hours a day, I would work on her from my hamster ball.
I'm thinking about now how I kind of want my own hamster ball, like not in theory, like a real life one.
Well, we're waiting for Allison to make the call. I wanted to read a quote, and it goes back to the issue of why I am a loud and proud vegan. And it reads, "If I am to be the voice of animals, then how should I speak? Am I to whisper when they are screaming in pain? Am I to remain calm when they tremble in fear? Am I to shout for mercy as their throats are being slit? Tell me how to speak for you to grant their freedom."
I like that a lot.
Yeah.
I often think if I were in their position, how would I want people to take action for me? How would I want people to conduct themselves in their day-to-day lives if I was in that much pain and suffering that much? Like, what would I want people to do? And I try to bring that into my activism and my life as well. And that quote is really kind of sums that up.
It just gives me chills every time I read it, including that time. And I really think that to be a leader is so important to, you know, to have an informed, confident, directed voice for change. And as a, you know, I'm a humanist, I'm an environmentalist, and I'm a vegan activist. I call this, you know, being a sound human being in the world. You know, don't be an idiot in the world. I think we should just merge all these philosophies under one heading and call it be a decent human, please.
So we have Stephanie on the air here. Hi, Stephanie.
Hi.
Hi, Stephanie.
Hi, Caroline.
Did you just get back from Mexico this morning?
Yes, I got in at 1 o'clock this morning through customs and out and home by 3:30. I'm a little tired.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today. I really appreciate it. I just explained on air, but I know you can't pick us up in Nanaimo, that you are my absolute hero in terms of dog rescue and being a leader in animal rescue.
Thank you.
And did you want me to carry on, Allison?
Yeah, I think Caroline has a question for you, Stephanie.
Sure.
So I've known you since 2012, and I met you in Mexico, where I was living at the time, also doing dog rescue. And, you know, it's my personal mission, as you know, to veganize the world one person at a time. We normally use this term for recipes.
But you can veganize people, too, as Caroline has proved.
So I just want to... I've been asking you to become a vegan for a long time, and you haven't been ready. And then a couple of days ago, I mentioned that perhaps it was time to come over to the side of justice, from the dark side. And you, for the first time, gave me an opening, and I almost fell off out of my hamster ball.
And well, I think I'm ready.
You think you're ready. And so I just want to read you the definition of veganism really quickly.
So
and
you know what you're getting into.
So this is our creed. This is our philosophy. And and I want to see if you're up for it.
Okay,
and it is a philosophy and a way of living which seeks to exclude, as far as is possible and impractical, all forms of exploitation of and cruelty to animals for food, clothing, or any other purpose, and by extension promotes the development and use of animal-free alternatives for the benefit of humans, animals, and the environment. In dietary terms, it denotes the practice of dispensing with all products derived wholly or partly from animals.
Okay.
How do you feel about that creed, about that philosophy, about that lifestyle?
I love the philosophy. I love the creed, what you just read. And I would be lying if I told you that I was anything other than scared, because I don't know anything other than what I've been doing. But I'm absolutely willing to give it a shot. I just can't, I can't pretend I don't know what's happening anymore, because I do know what's happening. And it bothers me.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I think it's time. Like, I just 2 days ago turned 45 years old. My body is falling apart, and I can't help but think there are things I could be doing differently, and I think this is one of it.
Yay.
I'm so impressed. So you're going to go vegan.
I'm going to give it a shot, for sure. I'm absolutely going to do my very best, and I say that with integrity. I mean it.
And I want to acknowledge your fear, because as you said, this is all you've ever known, and it's all most people have ever known. It is the way things have been done, and so that's part of one of my goals, is to normalize being vegan, really. So I'd like to ask you officially. Will you become a vegan?
Yes.
This is like a wedding or something.
I want to do it.
Now, I also want to say to you that I'm going to be calling you after, and we're doing some dog rescue stuff tomorrow as well.
Yes.
But I'm going to be here 100% to be your support and with resources and checking in with you. And, you know, in the first little while, a lot of people go through detox. And it wouldn't surprise me if you are going to go through a cheese detox and have some cravings and, you know, what do I make for dinner? And I've been shopping with you, and it's a chemical. I don't, shitstorm. I'm probably not allowed to say that on air.
It's okay.
And so we got to work on that nutritional input. So I can help you a lot with that.
Thank you.
But I adore you. Do you know why do you know why I've picked you as a target, as one of my targets?
You know, I was thinking about that, but I'm not too sure. I thought, well, maybe, I don't know, maybe I'm your best chance. I really don't know. Yeah.
I'm going to tell you why. It is because I consider you to be massively empathetic. Mm. I consider you to be strongly intelligent. And people love the heck out of you. You are wildly popular. You're wildly influential. And when you go vegan, people are going to take note of that. And they're going to say, why is Stephanie Dubinsky making this choice? And I hope you're going to be in a position to tell them.
Thank you. That's me. I'm all choked up, really. Thank you.
Well, I love you to bits, and thanks so much for coming on air today. It's just wonderful.
Yeah,
thank you.
Thanks for
really
so much, Stephanie.
It.
And thank you for the work that you're doing in Dog Rescue. That just really warms my heart. I can't imagine just you and the work Caroline does. Next week's show is actually going to be dedicated to Dog Rescue, so you might want to tune into that one. So it'll be really interesting interview we're doing. Thanks so much, Stephanie, and have a great day.
It's a privilege and an honor, so here we go.
Okay,
we'll take
care. We're
going
to do it together.
And get some sleep, okay?
I will, for sure.
Okay, bye-bye.
Okay, thanks very much, ladies.
Yay.
Okay, take care.
See you tomorrow.
Bye-bye.
So, wow, you did it again.
That feels one person at a time.
Great job. Great job. So we do have some time left here. I wanted to talk about just some of your approaches. So I know that as an introvert and as someone who likes to be in their hamster ball, you do a lot of armchair activism, as we call it here on Animal Voices, which is very effective. Obviously, you're changing a lot of people. And I wanted to talk about some of your online activism techniques. Mm-hmm. So I've been your Facebook friend since I've known you for several months now. And I have to say, you take a really, I would call it a very bold approach. And Almira, I'm not sure, like, obviously you're an activist, you eat, breathe and sleep activism. So what's your take on that? Like, you haven't seen any of Caroline's posts, but Caroline will post everything from fun recipes, but to really grueling and grotesque investigations that obviously people need to see. Mm-hmm. And, but, you know, it's tough. Like for me, as being an activist online, like I really try to stay away from that kind of stuff because I'm scared that I will scare people away. But Caroline's not worried about that. Like, what are your takes on that approach?
I think social media is very powerful, and I am not a very good social media activist. I don't spend a lot of time sharing things on Facebook in the hopes that other people will see them. Like, maybe I should do that more in the future, but so yeah, I'm going to go check out your Facebook page and see what I'm in for, but you never know who is looking at your post. I kind of wish is there a feature on Facebook you can see who's unfollowed you? Because I wonder if people, like, I'd like to see who's looking at these things and who's slowly incorporating it into their thought process, their actions, because sometimes I'll post something and I'll get a like from someone who is like from my undergrad degree and I don't know anything about them and they're certainly not an animal activist. And then I'm like, ooh, very exciting. And I like go on their page and I look, I'm like, what's it going on in your life? So yeah, I'm interested in hearing more about your strategy for Facebook.
Yeah. Caroline, perhaps you can share with us sort of the different kinds of content you strategically share on Facebook and how and why.
I share a lot of educational information, and that can just be little memes showing animals in, for instance, a calf in a veal crate, a sow in a farrowing crate, animals in a slaughterhouse situation. So I want to take the blinders off. Not everybody can or would go to a slaughterhouse like I did when I was a child, but I'm determined to bring the slaughterhouse to people, and I can do that on Facebook, and I have a lot of people on my page following me. And I also share, you know, in the vein of trying to diversify, a lot of recipes as well, and people really like that, and I get little private messages saying, you know, from people who have never responded to that graphic content saying, thanks so much for sharing. I'm in the process of transitioning to veganism and your recipes are really helping. So that's a more recently a strategy. I use a lot of humor, including humor about us vegans. I think we all know the joke amongst vegans. How do you know if somebody is vegan? Don't worry, they'll tell you. And I post a lot of humor around being vegan because I think sometimes we need to laugh at ourselves. I use my Facebook page as a clearinghouse for other vegans. So I try to bring a lot of content onto my Facebook page for other people to come and lift and share.
And I've
to
actually done that many times. So thank you. I think you've lifted some of my stuff too.
Absolutely.
That's what we do. So it works both ways. One thing that I've seen, one approach that you take is you do share images that are quite disturbing for people to see. I think they're important for people to see, right? Mm-hmm. It's just a matter of like, how do you know like where to share them? We put them on Facebook and everyone's going to see them. But what I have found with the images that you share is you have your own very heartfelt messages that go with them. For example, I'm looking at your page right now and you had posted, oh my gosh, I'm not even sure what I'm looking at here. It looks like a pig that's been bound up. Says eyes that's frozen right. In shock and horror as the killers took their body to eat a meal they will soon forget. I guess it's a pig roast, right?
Yeah.
Okay. You say, okay, so these were your words. You say, I ask us all to take a minute and think deeply on the unnecessary pain and suffering we cause animals. What is on your plate today? If it is the flesh of an animal, I urge you to ask yourself, how can I participate in this suffering knowingly? So what mm-hmm. I'm seeing what you're doing there is you are bringing this discussion out for people to acknowledge and to think about
Absolutely.
Publicly. I applaud you for that. I mean, we need to be doing more of that, I think.
I want to show a lot of leadership around activism and around mm-hmm. animals.
Because if you don't do it, who will, right?
Animals have voices, but they don't speak English and we don't speak their language other than we should be able to acknowledge what the screaming means. But we have a lot of denial and a lot of separation. So it's really important for me to find my energy and to find my voice and to use it in a way that communicates these messages to people so that they can create change mm-hmm. in their lives. And the light bulb goes on. People can have their heads in the sand for their entire lives, like 50, 60, 70 years old, and then all of a sudden say, something will get to them, something will get under their skin, and they'll make the change.
And you never know what it's going to be. Like another one of your strategies that you mentioned before is that you'll post the film Earthlings online about once a month. Tell us about that.
I don't assume because I've done something once that right. everyone is ready at that time.
Or that they've even seen it.
Right. Or that they've even seen it.
Yeah.
So I post it and then I repost it. I can remember the very first time I shared Earthlings, I got no comments. I got no shares. Mm-hmm. I got no interest. Nobody was interested in that. Now, I don't know, I shared it this week again. How many people have shared that from my page this week and commented on it? So I will go back and I'll share that again next week.
You actually had 22 likes on it this week.
Did I?
That's
you
a
know,
lot.
Like coming from...
And six shares. That's good. Yeah. That's like for... Like,
six shares. That's fantastic.
I know if I shared it, probably no one would look at it. And wow, that's great.
Do we have enough time for me to talk about movie night? Or
sure.
not so much.
Yeah, we've got a couple minutes. Go for it.
I'm going to talk fast. So a few months ago, Racing Extinction was on, and I was in Mexico at the time, and I invited about 10 friends over to sit down and watch that show that is brought to us by the director of The Cove. And it is just an absolutely powerful show about what we're doing to animals on this planet, what we're doing to the planet and our role in that and what we can do to change. And we watched that together huddled together in my hotel room because that was what I had on offer. And afterwards, we shared a lot of tears. And one of the women said, I feel so powerless. I feel so powerless. And another woman chimed in and said that she felt the same. And I said, well, what are we going to what are we going to do about this? We have to get our acts together. Now, after I left Mexico, two of the people in that room, this story just makes me so excited. They got together and they created a meatless meetup. That was in December. It has now over 100 members.
Whoa!
Marcela in Mexico, and Savannah in Mexico, in Puerto Vallarta.
Puerto Vallarta.
Now, Diane Swanson was just there. And
Denise.
From the show, and she participated with them in their first meatless meetup. Now, I'm not taking credit for that at all. Those two women are amazing, and they brought that together. But pulling together people to watch a movie, pulling together empathetic people who want to help animals, that, you know, just if you do, you know, nothing else but connect people who can have ideas and bring them into reality. So that raised their activism by meeting each other. Alone, they felt powerless, but together they were a collective. And now they're 100 strong and growing. And people, there's a Facebook site for that, and they are sharing recipes and talking about being vegan and going from vegetarian to vegan. And that was December they met.
That's amazing.
February.
Community is so important.
Oh yeah, and that's just one success story. It's all because of you. So thank you, Caroline.
No, I'm not taking credit for that, but it's just, you know, bringing people together and getting them, you know.
I think you should take credit. It all starts somewhere. And thank you for coming on the show today to speak about your strategies and your quest and your goals and your life's passion to veganize all the people in your life one person at a time. Thank you so much. It's been fascinating. So you have been listening to Animal Voices on 100.5 FM CFRO Co-op Radio in Vancouver, Canada. Please join us on our next show next Friday, February the 26th. As I mentioned before, we'll be having filmmaker Gary Charbonneau on the show, who created the film Vancouver Aquarium Uncovered, and he's now being sued by the Vancouver Aquarium. We'll be having him on the show to tell us his side of that story. We'll also be having animal dog rescuer Mark Ching on the show from the Animal Hope and Wellness Foundation in California. He goes to China to rescue dogs from the meat trade, and he'll be on the show to tell us about his work in that. We here at Animal Voices want to connect with you online. Go to animalvoices.org. You can stream shows or download the shows as podcasts there, and you can also subscribe to us via iTunes. Stay in touch with us on our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver, and join us on Twitter at Animal Voices YVR. As I mentioned before, we do need people to help with the show. We are an all-volunteer run radio station, and we need help. I need help. So if you want to get involved, and if you feel that you have the aptitude or interest to produce or host shows or do interviews, and you have good organizational skills and you're familiar with the issues of animal advocacy and veganism, please send us an email at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. We can use your help and training will be provided. You can also send us your suggestions and comments about the show, and you can post a message on our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver. We are closing the show now with a song dedicated to Caroline. It's called Today I'm Gonna Try and Change the World. It's played by my band, the 15th Field Band, with vocalist Carrie McCaffrey. Stay tuned for Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith. Thank you so much for listening to Animal Voices today, and remember to be kind to the animals.
Today I'm gonna try and change the world. Gonna take it one day at a time. I've made my resolution. I've opened up my eyes. Today I'm gonna try and change the world. I'm gonna say hello to my neighbor.
Today I'm gonna try and change the world.